One Sunday morning, the minister at a local Baptist church was very preoccupied by the money that the church needed for a new roof. Perplexed by how he was going to ask the congregation to come up with the resources, he thought he might add a moving piece of music to the service to accompany an impassioned plea. But he was annoyed to discover that the church's regular organist was out sick that day, and a substitute had come at the last minute. So the pastor went to the substitute organist and begrudgingly said, "Here's a copy of today's service. You'll have to come up with something to play after I make an announcement about stewardship." At the end of the service, the minister stood up and said, "Brothers and sisters, the roof is going to cost twice as much as expected, and we need another $30,000. If there's anyone who is willing to pledge $1,000 or more, please stand up now." At that moment, the substitute organist played the national anthem. Everyone in the congregation felt compelled to stand, and suddenly the church had enough money for the new roof. And that's the story of how the substitute organist became the regular organist at the local Baptist church. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to hang out with Jesus on the 4th of July? Would Jesus be fun to be with on Independence Day? Would he be at the party celebrating America alongside us? Or would he be mourning and calling us to some form of repentance? The Gospel of John tells us the story of Jesus' life by describing how he celebrated Jewish holidays. Jesus celebrates three Passovers, an unnamed feast, then the Feast of Tabernacles, then the Feast of Dedication, or Hanukkah. And on every holiday, Jesus did something that infuriated the religious and political leaders. Passover, like our 4th of July, was a holiday commemorating Jewish independence and freedom from Egyptian rule. Jesus definitely celebrated Passover. But he always did so in an unorthodox and countercultural way. You may remember he cleansed the temple on the holiday of Passover. And even more unsettling is the fact that Jesus was killed on Passover as well. You've heard the phrase, born on the 4th of July. Well, one could make a strong argument that Jesus of Nazareth was crucified on the 4th of July, because he was arrested, tried, and executed on the Jewish celebration of Independence Day. To complicate matters even further, our holidays celebrating freedom and liberty and independence wrought by American military power have much more in common with the Roman Empire than they do with Israel. Apart from dying on a Roman cross, being tried and tortured by a Roman governor named Pilate, healing the servant of a faithful Roman centurion, and faithfully saying, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's," there doesn't seem to be very many other obvious examples of Jesus encountering the Roman Empire. But the Gospels were seditious documents written at a time when the followers of Jesus were persecuted by Roman authorities. Therefore, encounters between Jesus and the power of Rome are often hidden within highly symbolic stories with metaphorical language to protect the early church should the gospel fall into the wrong hands. For instance, in Mark 5, what looks like the story of Jesus traveling to the city of Gerasa, exercising a particularly nasty cohort of demons and sending them into a herd of pigs, is in fact much more than meets the eye. The city of Gerasa was a part of the Decapolis, a region made up of 10 cities on the east side of the Sea of Galilee that the Roman Empire had conquered and then settled with army veterans in payment for their services. About the time the Gospel of Mark was written, Simon Bar Goria, a Jewish man, revolutionary, led the town of Gerasa in a violent rebellion against the empire. And in response to this revolt, the Roman Emperor Vespasian sent an expedition of the 10th Legion to Gerasa, burned the town, and killed 1,000 of its citizens. Gerasa was a symbol of violent Roman military power and occupation, as well as violent Jewish resistance. This explains why a story that appears on the surface to be about demonic possession is filled with Roman military language and imagery. A legion was not the name of a group of demons. It was the largest military unit in the Roman army, made up of 5,000 soldiers, equivalent to a division. And it just so happens that the legion occupying Palestine at this time was Legion 10 Fentensis, or the Legion of the Strait, founded by Augustus Caesar. And the symbol of that 10th legion that was emblazoned on their shields, you guessed it, was the image of a wild boar or a pig. The 10th legion was one of the reasons why Jews in the first century and afterwards referred to the Romans as pigs. They were an expert military division with legendary exploits. The Roman 10th Legion defeated Pompey. They defeated Mark Antony. They conquered Macedonia, Syria, and Parthia. And eventually they fought against the Jews many times of many revolutions, and including the Jewish War of 70 AD, where they conquered Jerusalem and destroyed the temple. They were a massive military force. Less like Green Berets or Delta Force or SEAL Team 6, more like the 82nd Airborne Division. The Screaming Eagles, Big Red One, Old Iron, they were huge. The word a herd in the story was not a term that was ever used for pigs. Instead, it was a word that was always commonly applied to a disorganized group of military soldiers, recruits, or veterans. And this extraordinary military force that we hear about, the Legion, was so powerful, no one could subdue it, begged Jesus not to send them out of the country that they occupied. And when Jesus gave them permission, he was giving them a standard Roman military command in the Greek, saying, "You are dismissed." And then the swine followed another military command and charged down the steep bank as if they were the charge of the light brigade into the sea to be swallowed up like Pharaoh's army. Mark was using coded language to offer a symbolic portrait of how Roman imperialism was destroying the hearts and minds of an occupied people. His first century readers would have loved nothing more than to see the famous Roman army's 10th legion driven into the sea like pigs. There's no way to read this story with integrity and deny its overt military and political implications. Mark is saying Jesus had come to liberate people from the Roman imperial occupation by driving out the infamous, brutal 10th Legion. However, if that were the whole story, then Jesus would be similar to Simon Bar Goria, similar to a militant Jewish zealot advocating a violent revolution against the empire, inferring that the Romans were in fact pigs and pushing for an ethnic holy war. But this is not simply the story of Jesus confronting the Roman army's 10th legion. It is also a story of Jesus' encounter with one human being who is living a painful and humiliating existence. Possessed by the unclean spirits of war, violence, brutality, death, loss, and grief that followed in the wake of the 10th legion's brutality, this man had lost every shred of his humanity and was trapped in a self-destructive living nightmare. Mark tells us, in a haunting portrait, he lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain, for he had often been restrained with shackles and chains. But the chains he wrenched apart, and the shackles he broke into pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. The tombs are mentioned three different times in the story to emphasize death, hopelessness, the despair that consumed this man. And these tombs were likely the graves of those who had died on the battlefield in Gerasa, fighting for or against the 10th Legion. This man was roaming a military graveyard, an Arlington cemetery, a Gettysburg battlefield that contained the corpses of fallen soldiers. And in all likelihood, he was one of the very many retired veterans of the Roman 10th Legion who fought against Jewish revolutionaries and killed his fair share of the enemy. And now he was there as a veteran, living among the graves of his comrades and those he had killed, haunted by their memories, afflicted by flashbacks of war and death, tormented by the recollections of their screams and the blood and the bodies. This veteran's body and mind may have looked like it survived the war, but now he was at war with himself. He may have been semi-retired, but he could not separate himself from the violence he'd experienced. Once a soldier, always a soldier. He was suffering from internalized oppression and psychosomatic captivity as a result of losing his friends in battle and participating in the violent military conquest of another people. His body and mind had turned inward to destroy itself. Unable to be still, his body was raging and his mind was never at peace. He was fighting a terrible and costly internal battle. There are many different possibilities for what this veteran of the 10th Legion was experiencing in our language. Grief, shell shock, post-traumatic stress disorder, what psychiatrists have now deemed moral injury. When I was in the Army, I read a book entitled On Killing, The Psychological Costs of Learning to Kill in War and Society. And it was the first time I realized that simply being trained to kill could have a dramatic psychological impact on me as a human being. And so I began to wonder, what are we doing to our soldiers? What are we doing to ourselves? Today we live in a nation that spends nearly $700 billion a year on defense, which is more than the 7 largest nations in the world combined. And yet we can't seem to find housing for homeless veterans or fully fund VA hospitals to provide adequate medical care. With all our flag waving and fireworks displays, our wild cheers of God bless America, America first, support the troops, freedom isn't free, I wonder if we have forgotten about the human cost. Do we really care about soldiers and veterans? Or do we only care about them when they are fighting, but abandon them when they get home? 31% of Vietnam veterans suffered with some form of PTSD. Estimates say now that over 100,000 Vietnam veterans took their own lives after returning from combat. There's no memorial for them. 20 veterans commit suicide in America every day. In addition, veterans are involved in a disproportionate number of violent incidents in society, like mass shootings. Our cities are like modern-day garages, filled with lifeless places where veterans are suffering, isolated, cut off, and alone. Ask yourself, why aren't we taking better care of those who sacrifice their bodies and minds and souls in war? The veteran of the wild boars of the 10th Legion living among the tombs in Gerasa believed that Jesus had come to further torment him, to contribute to his anguish, and to cause him further trauma. It was a reasonable belief because the difference between Jesus and this veteran could not have been more stark. The veteran was a Roman occupier and oppressor of the Jewish people. And Jesus was a Jewish liberator who would have been deeply sympathetic to the zealots and violent Jewish revolutionaries in Gerasa who revolted against the empire. In the eyes of the Jewish people, a Roman military veteran was their enemy. The disciples wouldn't have been surprised or even upset if Jesus had sent the veteran over the cliff instead of the pigs. But shockingly, that is not at all what happened, is it? Jesus shows us what it means to love our enemies by treating the veteran of the brutal 10th Legion with compassion and grace. He had not come to torment him, but to liberate him. To offer the veteran an honorable discharge from pain and torment. To dismiss the evil spirits of war and violence and death that haunted him. and to free him from self-destruction once and for all. Jesus was walking a very fine line in this Gerasene cemetery. He was tiptoeing between his own people's desire for independence from Roman occupation and this veteran's desire for independence. Ironically, both the Jewish people and this veteran were occupied by the power of the 10th Legion. But while their situations were similar, Jesus did not compare their circumstances or condone the thirst for violence on either side. The miracle in this story is not simply the salvation of the tormented veteran, but that Jesus was able to love his enemy without disregarding the brutality of the Roman Empire, without neglecting the anguish that comes from war or ignoring the oppression of his people. What is sheer genius and divinity here on display is not a magic trick of manipulating spirits, but Jesus distinguishing this man from his violent past and separating him from the Roman legion that possessed his mind, body, and soul. He detached him from his role in the military, uncoupled him from empire, freed him from the war he was now fighting with himself, put him at ease, decommissioned him into a true retirement, and provided him with peace. In this impressive display of love, Jesus proves that it is possible to be anti-war, anti-violence, and even anti-empire without being anti-soldier, anti-veteran, or anti-human. There is no zero-sum game for Jesus here. It is a lie to claim then that we must be either pro-war or against the troops. Jesus does not do horrific things to veterans. He does not spit on military veterans or call them baby killers or fascist pigs as some anti-war protesters did during the Vietnam War. He offers love to the veteran. But at the same time, we see no flag waving for the Roman Empire either. Jesus was able to love the veteran without celebrating war and violence and brutality. He cared for his enemies without becoming a nationalistic supporter of the 10th Legion or a Roman imperialist sympathizer. Jesus rejected Roman occupation and its violent oppression of his people. And yet he did not support retribution or military revenge or armed revolution against Rome. Instead, he offered love. Love to the veterans of Roman wars by providing him with new life and a new future of health and community and wholeness and peace. And when the veteran tried to go back with Jesus across the sea, Jesus said, you're needed here. Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy has been shown to you. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to hang out with Jesus on the 4th of July? There might not be as much flag waving or hot dog eating as we usually have. Jesus didn't have much interest in pork. There might be talk of freedom, liberty, and independence, but it would not be about the freedom that comes from war and bombs and guns or violence. It would be about the liberation that comes when we are freed from the demons of our violent past and the unclean spirits of self-destruction by the compassion and mercy of a God who loves us in spite of ourselves. There might be talk about love, but it would not be about love of country or flag, nation or military or war. Instead, it would be about the love of other human beings, regardless of their citizenship, nationality, or flag. It would be about the love for soldiers and families and veterans and victims, even love for our enemies. If we hung out with Jesus on the 4th of July, there would be a conversation about a kind of love that brings people out of the tombs, the kind of love that brings new life out of lifeless places, the kind of love that overcomes death with the power of resurrection, the kind of love that reunites people with friends and family and restores them to community, the kind of love that heals the wounds of war with the balm of peace. Jesus beckons us to follow him now, to love people across the sea, to love our enemies, to transcend the barriers of ethnicity and politics, to overcome war and hostility, to see those who are isolated and suffering in places of death, tormented by a history of violence, and to distinguish them from their role in society from their transgressions or afflictions, and to bring them the healing power of life, liberation, and community. It might be a strange experience for many Americans today to hang out with Jesus on the 4th of July. But regardless of how strange it would be, one thing is for certain. The kind of love we would learn from Jesus on Independence Day is a love worth standing for. A love worth singing for. A love worth pledging our allegiance for. A love worth giving our lives for. And a love worth celebrating. Because it is the only kind of love that has the power to truly save the world. Amen.